All right. We are in Proverbs, John. Proverbs chapter 10. Proverbs 10. Last week we looked at the first five verses. So soon you'd like to look at the next group of verses. Verse 6 says, these are probably grouped together at least maybe 6 through 14 seem to have a lot of similarities, being about the mouth and lips and so forth. But even down to verse 22, there's probably maybe forms a unit. But verse 10 is a little different. As you notice, if you look at verse 6 through 14, and you look at the second half of the verse, you'll notice that every one of them starts with a contrast with but, B-U-T, except for verse 10. So verse 10 is probably fits within this unit of 6 through 14 as a hinge verse that holds these together. And as we'll see when we get to 10, as opposed to being this contrast, it's more this comparison, given these two parallel lines here. Verse 6 says, and the New American Standard says, blessings are on the head of the righteous, but the mouth of the wicked conceals violence. The NIV on that second line has, but violence overwhelms the mouth of the wicked. If you have an NIV, I understand that in the margin it has a translation similar to the New American Standard. The the reason in this verse and why they have these alternate translations is that the way that the structure of the words are, that you can either violence or mouth, either one can be the subject, and so that's where you get this reversed sentence, and it makes a difference in it. But it starts off, it says, blessings are on the head of the righteous. But you notice that it doesn't say who's doing the blessing, and it doesn't specifically say what those blessings are. It just says blessings. So there's no specific references to whom or to what these blessings are. Blessings normally denote, the work of God. Unless something else is stated, even when it's not stated at the context, it's God doing it. So we would think in this regard, it would be God blessing. And blessing in a generic sense, especially within the Old Testament, within Hebrew concept here, would be a person is blessed with the sense of the ability to reproduce. Having children was a very important part of life. Also the sense of wealth, and then overcoming one's enemies. So those would be three broad things that blessing specifically, touch in that generic sense. So here it's not defined, but it just says blessings are on the head of the righteous. But then this is contrasted. Well, one thing, notice it says blessings, this plural, and that very possibly is pointing to the idea of greater quality and quantity, this in the sense of both the quantity and the quality of these blessings by both. Not just more blessings, but more and better, if you would. Blessings is kind of what the concept be. It's contrasted in the second half with, but the mouth of the wicked conceals violence, or as we mentioned, the NIV has, but violence overwhelms the mouth of the wicked. And that one, I think the NIV, that translation probably is the one with the advantage there. As I was mentioning a moment ago, that the issue in this second half is that either mouth or violence can function as the subject. And so you can have it as the New American Standard, where mouth comes and then violence at the end. Or you can flip it around as the NIV, violence and wicked. And the this word that makes all that pivot is the verb. And so in the New American Standard, it has conceals, but the NIV has overwhelms. And the thing is with this word, it is used in two ways. One is that it, in the sense of conceal, to hide, but it's also used in the sense of to fill. So something is filled up with something. And that's where we, the NIV, that kind of translation, it would you know, come across to the sense of to overwhelm. So like violence fills the mouth, which leads to that translation that, you know, to fill would lead to that, to fill up something would lead to that sense of to overwhelm, to fill up, to overwhelm. But still trying to understand that, the violence overwhelms the mouth of the wicked. Well, you know, try to think about that. You can see the advantage of the New American Standard. The mouth of the wicked conceals violence. That immediately makes sense. That a wicked person hides his violence. A wicked person through his distortions or secrets or whatever they, you know, lies, keeps actions of violence, secretive. But the idea of violence overwhelms the mouth seems to have the idea that it occupies the surface. It's not that it's being concealed, it's overwhelming you. It's not that the violence is overwhelming, in the sense that the violence is coming on the person, but that the violence is overwhelming them, that the face, the countenance, shows the violence, that it's... as one writer said, the man's evil is written all over his face. That kind of idea. So that, you know, it's looking at this. The wicked person cannot be trusted, he's going to say the things that are advantageous to him, with no concern about truth. One writer suggested that the ambiguity in this passage may be intentional. The writer specifically chose words that could be thought of either way, and so if you see that kind of intentional ambiguity here, then it would be a wicked person's mouth can conceal violence, but ultimately that violence will come back to overwhelm. And so the contrast, though, between blessings being poured out upon the righteous and this violence, the wicked person, his own violence, starts to be reflected through his countenance. So that you have that kind of a contrast there. The next one, verse 7, says, "The memory of the righteous is blessed, but the name of the wicked will rot." So in here we have that last word, rot being a very vivid description of social shame here. So as we could set something out, a piece of fruit or something out that would be, you know, ripe, and then it moves beyond ripe to the point where it starts to rot and nobody, you know, wants it away, it's useless. So it's saying that's what happens to the name of the wicked. The memory of the righteous, though, is blessed. Once again, it doesn't say who's blessing or in what sense that it's blessed. It's in that broad sense, but you know, the righteous person, the memory is there's the name, that person that you know what they did is remembered in a positive light, but the name of the wicked, it only becomes putrid. The idea here is on name too is not just simply a label to identify somebody, but it represents their character and their function, who they were. So when you think about that, when these, we see this as when things come out negative about people, when something comes out about somebody, that it affects who they are. It affects how they're remembered. It affects everything, that would go on. And listening just a little bit this afternoon when I was driving somewhere in the car, and there's the New England Patriots have been, were caught filming, videotaping the opposing team's defensive signals, which is a violation of the NFL rules. And so, you know, this is becoming kind of every day. I guess it started in one day, you know, and then the next day it became a bigger story. And as you know, it's one of these things that's kind of growing in terms of stories now, because it, one of the teams was New York, and it's got all the New York sports writers upset. So it's generating into a bigger story than it was. But the thing that's being discussed now is, how does that impact the coach of New England, Belichick's, reputation? And it was just kind of interesting listening to that after looking at this, that's what's saying, you know, the memory of the righteous is blessed, but the name of the wicked will rot. You know, so, you know, when you have people talking about, you know, a coach that has a very high profile, and then one thing associated with it, and the media, they're saying, how's that going to affect his reputation? How much more so when you're talking about, you know, this guy that was a Colombian drug lord that was captured this past week, and so I guess he's on the FBI's top 10 wanted list. You know, that's somebody that has that, you know, that has to be at the hallmark of what wickedness would be there. I think they're attributing like 1,500 deaths to this guy. And so you have that contrast once again here, as these are set up in contrast. Then verse 8 says, "The wise of heart will receive commands, but a babbling fool will be ruined." Or the NIV has "chattering fool." So the first part, the wise heart will receive commands. This is looking at a wise person, one that's wise of heart in that regard, has that attitude about him. He listens. The wise of heart receives. He listens, and he can respond to authority. You know, so this idea of listen and learn. But on the other hand, the fool, in this case, he's always talking. He's always chattering, and thus he doesn't learn. You know, here it's just looking at someone that's consistently chattering. And so, you know, as you look at this heart issue, the wise of heart is able to listen, respond to authority. But the fool, in one sense, it's not even so much that he chooses to disobey as it is oblivious to it, because he's always somewhere else, always chattering. So, you know, the wise are characterized by this continual inner spiritual growth, which leads to wise speech, but the babbling fool despises wisdom and discipline. He's so full of himself, he does not have the capacity to, you know, house wisdom. His capacity is limited. He couldn't even let wisdom in, so to speak. And his chattering becomes dangerous. As you know, it becomes those people that have these clever opinions, but they're opinions that are not founded in any truth. It just becomes their clever little chattering. I had a friend in high school that whenever, you know, disagreements would come up or something, Craig would cite the dictionary, and he could give definitions that sounded, you know, you would have no doubt they came out of the dictionary. And he'd just make stuff up. But he'd win arguments very quickly because he's citing, you know, a dictionary. But he just had the ability to make it sound like a dictionary definition. And so, you know, some people just are clever in their opinions, but there's no truth. look at chapter 1 and verse 7. Says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, or the beginning of knowledge, at least in that one. you know, how the fool is, you know, is not there. And then back in our chapter that we're in, chapter 10, verse 13 says, on the lips of the discerning wisdom is found, but a rod is for the back of him who lacks understanding. And then in 16, a worthless man digs up evil when his words are like scorching fire. You know, here we're just, you know, basically it's just saying that, you know, fools are those, you know, they talk big. Have that big talk, but that's what it is, it's talk. Fools, kind of from our study last year, are those who despise wisdom and understanding. We saw that in chapter 1. Fools reject knowledge. That is, they have no use for knowledge. The fool has rejected the fear of the Lord. The fool is dull, close-minded, thick-headed, stubborn, rejecting information from others and wisdom from God. So here's the fool is just always talking, never listens, not able to take it in because he's always talking. Verse 9 says, he who walks in integrity walks securely, but he who perverts his way will be found out. The NIV has, who takes crooked paths. That word for pervert means to twist, so it can be translated as perverted or crooked. Here we have this promise. Wisdom provides this protection, this promise protection. He who walks in integrity walks securely. The Hebrew word translated securely expresses that sense of well-being and security which results from having something or someone in whom to place confidence. Thus it basically comes this the sense of a state of mind, confidently carefree, but it would be in something beyond that, not just that one is confident in himself. For this to be looking at this righteous person, he who walks in righteousness, he who walks in integrity, walks securely. This position of confidence because of that. Contrast to that, but he who perverts his ways will be found out. Perverted or crooked, this word and its derivatives describe twisted and perverted acts of sinful man. But often, you know, within Proverbs, it looks at bad speech. And so that may be part of this twisted sense is of, wicked misuse of speech. He who walks in integrity walks securely. Contrast that, though, he who perverts his ways will be discovered, will be found out. You know, there is that sense that, when you walk on twisted paths, that that there is that point that comes that it's discovered, that it becomes known by people. And we see this all the time. There's nothing about that statement that's like some revelation, because you can just almost open up the newspapers weekly and see where that has come. Somebody, not that it only happens to people of notoriety, but those are the ones that get put in the newspapers, but it happens on the same level in other areas that people, are discovered. Verse 10, he who winks the eye causes trouble, but a babbling fool will be ruined. The NIV has winks maliciously. He winks the eye causes trouble. So the NIV puts in the descriptive word malicious, so that we get the idea that we're not talking about a friendly wink. We use the term wink typically, in more of a positive, friendly term. But the concept here, or the usage here, is that a wink is that secretive message. It is a way of communicating something. if you look at chapter 6, verse 12, a worthless person is a wicked man. A worthless person, a wicked man, is the one who walks with a perverse mouth, who winks with his eyes, who signals with his feet, who points with his fingers, who with perversity in his heart continually devises evil, who speaks strife. Therefore his calamity will come suddenly, instantly. He will be broken, and there will be no healing. So it's that sense of being secretive. There's an episode of Seinfeld where they're at the cafe having breakfast, and Jerry is on this health kick and eating a grapefruit, and the grapefruit, when he puts it in, as grapefruit tends to do, you know, it squirts out and hits other people, hits George in the eye. And it causes George unknowingly to wink all day long. And so everybody, when you know, it's one of these secret messages. Whatever he says, he winks, everybody assumes he means the opposite. And that would be the deal here. It's the secret message that's communicated through something. And it's this opposite of, of the integrity. But here, instead of a contrast, notice we have two lines. He who winks, the eye causes trouble. This word trouble means inner sorrow or pain. So he causes trouble. He causes pain to other. This mischievous person, he winks. He brings trouble into other people's lives. And then the second line, we've already seen once before, and a babbling fool will be ruined. This chattering fool, it will be ruined. Possibly here what you have is set in parallel is almost two differences, but yet they come together at this point, is that on the one you have kind of the sly, mischievous, devious person that plans things. And then on the other hand, you have this chattering fool that just, is full of himself. But yet their end is the same. That,
the writer of Proverbs,
yeah, and I think that's where, like the NIV, they're going to add that word because we don't think of winking in a negative sense. We understand it can be, it can be that sense of if I tell you something and wink, it can. But on the other hand, it can be something positive. And so that's it's appropriate for translations to put in something like sly or mischievous or something to, because it's very clear that the usage in Proverbs that it's a negative thing. Well, we'll look at next time at the other part of chapter 10 as mentioned earlier. If you look, start at verse 6 and look through verse 14, you see the second half of all of those is contrasted to the first, except for verse 10. Verse 10 sets in the middle as this hinge between these two passages, really forms one unit. And the second part, 11 through 14, have very similar things as they also look at lips and mouth and so forth. Any questions or thoughts or insights into these verses here? I would imagine. I think, as if you look at these in terms of you know, taking things out and saying which ones, you know, really fit. You know, there's some of these that, you know, from a parent standpoint, they don't, you know, as a proverb, they're probably not proverbs that you could quote to your kids or put on the wall that really communicate. But the concepts, you know, are there in the sense of verse 7. You know, I mean, that becomes that truism. The memory of the righteous is blessed, but the name of the wicked will rot. You know, you're talking about your character and how you're going to be known and the reflection it has upon your family. Verse 8 is probably the most applicable to parenting. But once again, that's not a real one that works real well, you know, on a poster or calling your kid a babbling fool. Probably isn't a real good parenting move. But to have that thought there and to realize this, you know, it's kind of a thing that teachers say, you know, you can't learn while you're, you know, if you're talking, you know. And there's something true about that if you don't stop and listen. Now, you can be perfectly quiet and not listen. So it's not just if you're talking, but it's that idea of, you know, to listen. But the other part is what's important, not just the negative, but the positive, that the wise receive commands. You know, this response to authority, this response to listening, that's wise. And then verse 9, he who walks in integrity, walks securely. You can walk with confidence if you're in integrity. But on the other hand, he perverts ways will be found out. Well, you know, one of the things about secrets of lives is there's an element of fear that's always there. You know, what happens when you're found out? And that's true, you know, with kids, even not talking about being greatly wicked, but in the sense of when you lie, when you do things, when you stay out, you know, when you sneak out, it's living with that sense of, you know, will I get caught? As opposed to the one that's walking with integrity has a sense of confidence because they're not fearing those things. So those, you know, these kind of proverbs, like I said, probably don't make good posters for the, you know, the refrigerator, but the concepts really do. And, you know, one of the challenges is, you know, how do you, you know, is taking these and putting them in, you know, in your teaching, in your conversations in ways that communicates it. Well, any other thoughts or ideas? You could look at other translations, and so now there are a lot of other proverbs that are very quotable. But I was just talking about these particular ones. But you could also, you know, which I didn't do, but you could look at the Message or Living Bible or the New Living Bible, things like that. That you know, for some of that also. But you know, I mean, it's definitely definitely tempting for a teacher to say, "A babbling fool will be ruined." You know, that's very tempting. Are there prayer requests?